Yeah, hi, how's it going?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Good, thanks for taking some time out today to talk to us about
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Well, kind of wanted to talk to you about not only the series, but the DVDs as well.
Sure.
You have the great advantage of having, obviously, season one and two in viewers' hands now that season three is about to air.
Yeah.
So how's the experience of going back and revisiting those seasons to do commentaries and work on them again? Has that impacted you all in creating season three?
A little bit, yeah. It's, you know, going back and doing the extras and watching the episodes over again is like all the fun without any of the work. You know, it's a lot of fun to make this series, but it's a hell of a lot of work. And to go back and to see the finished product and to do interviews with directors and to go back and watch the audition tapes like we had the first season of all our series regulars. It's pretty great. And in a couple instances it reminds us of things that maybe we forgot, you know, from 10, 11 episodes back and gives us things to think about for future episodes.
You have the Shield, one of the things about it that really draws me to it is the real balance between kind of the very episodic, you know, things that occur within one episode to the through lines that run an entire series. When you're laying out, you know, a season like season three, you know, how are you mapping those two out? Are you thinking, you know, I know what's going to happen this series, I know what's going to happen at the last one, and I'm going to build towards that, or is it grow?
We have certain things that we did come up with at the beginning of the season, you know, me and the other writers, and that we wanted to aim for. At the same time, there's so much story material in any given episode that most of what we come up with for an episode, we come up with when we're working on that particular episode. The nice thing about having episodes that have four or five storylines in them is that you can always do two or three that can start and finish within that episode. And then you can have a couple of storylines that pick up, you know, something involving the internal dynamics of your characters that have been going on for a little while, and you can continue them. So yeah, for people who come fresh to the show, when they watch it on TV, there's enough story that can start and finish that they can feel a certain level of completion watching it. But for our hardcore fans, there's also stuff that rewards them for continuing to watch every week.
Yeah, there's definitely a Vic Mackey addiction clubs out there with, you know, and I found when I was watching both season one and two that the season lent itself very easily to watching two, three, four episodes back to back, that there's, you know, definite, you know, congruities between the episodes that if you watch several together, you get a payoff from, you know, the third episode in that, you know, was set up on you know, three episodes back.
Right. Yeah, there's stuff there that we haven't forgotten about that we'll pick up. And sometimes things are delayed intentionally, and then other times you don't really have much of a choice. You know, we had a whole storyline with Gilroy, who was Vic's boss, the assistant chief, the first season, and he got busted, and we wanted to bring him back early in the second season, and the actor himself wasn't available. He was doing a play, and he became available later in the season. So the episode where we had him come back and shed his electronic monitoring device and everything, that was later in the season, even though we initially wanted to do it earlier. So sometimes it seems like we pick up stuff you know, later on, and sometimes it's intentional and sometimes it's just an actor isn't available right away.
Mm-hmm. So obviously the attention on the series, you know, now every series seems to be growing with, you know, accolades and critic picks and so on and so forth. How has that impacted the way that the show is made and the way that you approach the show? I mean, does the added attention create higher stakes creatively?
It puts pressure on us when you've been lucky enough to get good reviews your first year or two. You don't want this to be the year that everyone turns on you. So you end up working really hard. The nice thing for us is when you get the good reviews, it gets the network off your back a little bit. You know, even though you feel like the show's good and they feel like the show's good, you are working in a vacuum for a little bit. And when the critics weigh in, you know, we just Yesterday, for instance, there was a very nice review of our show in Entertainment Weekly, for the first, reviewing the first 5 episodes of the season. The network, when they see that, they get very happy. and not that they don't have trust in what we're doing over here, but if the critics are saying, hey, things are going well, then they're more likely to, think things are going well and to give you your freedom to continue doing it.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of pressures do you get? I mean, being a shot on 16, gritty, very different looking show, given high definition TV push, kind of across networks. And how will this show kind of translate in a high definition TV world?
I don't know enough technically to know how it will. I do know that the show is intentionally shot not to look as pretty as we could make it. It's intended to be viewed more as if trying to give you a ride along feeling, a more documentary sense to it. And certainly there are other shows that aim for a more beautiful palette and appearance. In the future, in a high def world, it still won't be the prettiest show on the block. In fact, there'll probably be a bigger chasm between how we look and how other shows look. But hopefully, we'll still feel authentic, feel like it's something that's being caught on the fly, and that will contribute to the overall feeling of intimacy in the show. There are some shows that by the way they photograph the shows, it creates a separation between itself and the audience. It sort of forces you to notice beauty shots and how things are done. Our show strives, we don't always succeed, but we strive to make you not notice the filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably going to look even more grainy with future technologies.
Has there ever been consideration on moving digital in terms of the shooting to be able to have an ability to shoot more and not be tied to film stock?
It's been discussed, but never seriously. That's something that for now my DP is happy doing it the way we're doing. If he came to me and said, I think we should consider this, then I would give it consideration. But he's happy with what he's achieving. There was a discussion on the pilot whether we wanted to shoot it in 35 and 16 or in digital. And there were a couple of, little tests done just to give us a sense of what it looked like. And our director, Clark Johnson, suggested to us that he wanted to land, on 16. And we followed him, and it's worked for us. So there's no plan to change it at the moment.
Yeah, it's remarkable as a series, what 26 episodes so far for the first 2 seasons?
Yes.
How you've been able to manage to maintain precisely the same look in episode 26 that you had in the pilot, and that through line is a visual style is something you don't usually see.
Well, thanks. It is an attempt to we're trying to progress, we're trying to learn. So I see little differences along the way, but I do think that the show feels the same. From beginning to end, and we have a consistency. We have the same DP who did the pilot has done every episode for us.
Wow.
The same camera operators, much the same camera crew. We have a lot of the same directors who work over and over for us, and so the look. We're always trying to push the boundaries of the look and not just say, we don't tell our directors it has to be this way or that way. But we do say that, that there's a feeling we're going after, and we allow them to explore within that vein, and it's worked so far, I guess.
So, could The Shield take place anywhere but L.A.? Is L.A. an intrinsic element to the heart of The Shield?
It is for our show. If we lived and worked in Houston or in Chicago, I think you could do the film there. I don't think The Shield can be filmed in one city playing for another the way that a lot of TV shows do. I think, we're out there, we're not trying to hide anything. And LA is such a multicultural town that I think the best place for it is LA. I think you could film in other cities if you were there filming and living there and experiencing life there the way that we experience life in Los Angeles.
You're definitely showing a side of LA that most people never realize, and it's much, much further past the glitz and glamour that most people see
Yeah,
today.
well, LA is a very big town, and when we were making this pilot, the thing that I said to Clark was I said, you always seem to see the same places of LA in the movies and TV shows. I had moved out here when I was 23 years old and had a very definitive image of LA, and that's, you see downtown, you see, the Beverly Hills Century City area, you see Hollywood, and you see the beach. Those are like the only four you tend to see, and I was kind of shocked when I moved here to find myself driving through all these other areas that looked different than what I had seen, and that were much more real in my estimation, both good and bad real. And so Clark and I talked about the idea of trying to film the show in a way that those areas of Los Angeles that you're familiar with, Hollywood, the Hollywood sign, downtown, all these things, that those would be in the show, but in the background. That you would see those parts of the town that you're familiar with, but they'd be like Oz. They would be off in the distance, sort of glittering, so that it anchors you to a place you're familiar with, and yet we're in, the little side alley that you're not familiar with. That's dirtier and grungier and more ethnic and more dangerous than what you commonly associate Los Angeles with. And
And that has that blue tarp around
exactly.
it, which I think you could probably, I think that blue tarp shows up in, God, many of the episodes. Matter of fact, I think it's the same blue tarp.
It's not the same blue tarp. That's just what people do out here. And it's amazing. We have a wonderful production designer, Kitty Doris Bates, who ensures that our areas look authentic. And sometimes she has to do a lot of work, but a lot of times it's just a matter of filming what's there. It's just getting permission of people on the street to film, and it's just grabbing what people have done. We don't spend a ton of money on production design. We grab what we can. We're the kind of show that if a helicopter's flying overhead in the middle of a shot, we don't stop filming and we turn the camera up to get the helicopter so that we have a shot of a helicopter. We don't hire helicopters. It's really is a fly by your pants. Very much like a documentary crew. Just grab what you can, and you don't know what you're gonna grab that day. And we don't try to control the environment. We don't try to close off traffic on three streets just to film a street scene. We'll film with real traffic.
Wow.
And our guys, we have a new writer on our show who's a very accomplished guy. He, came up on St. Elsewhere and Moonlighting, and he co-created Murder One. And the first day he was on set, on one of his episodes, he came back the other day and was like, "Oh my God, Michael and the guys were just running through live traffic, and the cameraman was just following them, and he just couldn't believe that we filmed that way. He'd never seen that before in his, 20 years in television." And there is something different about it that seems to work for us. It wouldn't be appropriate for all shows, but it works really well for us.
So 26 plus episodes later, you still have to come back to the moment at the end of at the pilot.
Sure.
It's probably one of the more indelible moments, TV wise of being pulled along with rooting for a character and then having your jaw hit the floor. Do you look at that moment and say, wow, I could have moved that later, or what would the show be like without it, or how important is that, has that moment been to you? Now 3 seasons into it.
What's great about that moment is that it solidifies that Vic Mackey isn't just a good cop with a heart of gold who occasionally gets a little too rough with the absolute worst elements of society. It shows that he can be an extraordinarily bad guy. What's wonderful for the show is that viewers who have seen that and are familiar with that know now, not to assume anything. and not to assume that TV conventions will dictate how our stories play out. If you watch a Law and Order, Briscoe and Green, the two main cops, one of them's not, none of them are going to die in the course of the episode. You know, they're going to get somebody, somebody's going to go to trial, that person's either going to be found guilty or not guilty. You know, it's within a certain scope. On our show, I don't think you know anything that will happen, and when somebody gets put into a dangerous situation, you don't just say to yourself, oh, they'll get out of it. There's something in the back of your head that says maybe this person won't get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a wonderful thing when the audience isn't able to anticipate ahead of you. When I originally wrote that scene, I never thought the show would get made. I thought it was a cool ending to the episode, and I was just viewing the script as a writing sample. I really, really didn't think anyone would ever make the show. And there was discussion when it got picked up for pilot whether we really wanted to do that, especially so early in the series. And I thought for a day about possibly changing or taking it out, but then I said, this is what it is. This is what I wrote. This is a character. This is part of what appealed to the network when they bought it. I didn't know at the time exactly where we would go from there, but I wanted to be true to the script that they had bought, and it was important to me that we show this is the kind of person that it is. And we have been able to, myself and the other writers have been able to continue the show in a way that doesn't ignore that happened. And in fact, I'm working in editing on an episode right now where that event actually bubbles back up to the surface, in a way for Vic and Shane and Lemonhead. So we certainly don't ignore it, but we have been able to move beyond it as well. So that there are times when I think you watch episodes and you don't even think about it. And then there are other times when you watch an episode, you're going along and, oh, Vic's a great guy, blah, blah, and you're reminded, well, wait a minute, he shot this cop. it's been great for us to do that.
So how, do you, in terms of Vic Mackey, I mean, do you picture him, as a superhero? I mean, is he kind of like a modern superhero, or how does that character, when you think of Mackey, how does that character kind of resonate in your mind?
Well, I wrote for a show, Nash Bridges. I wrote for 3 years for that show where Nash really was written as a superhero, and there were sort of certain rules that applied that professionally Nash really was never wrong, and I don't think Vic is that way. I think Vic is an extraordinarily good cop who uses some extraordinarily bad measures. But he's not a superhero, and he's not always right. We love, on occasion, writing a line early on in an episode that, where Vic says, I know A happened. And then you find out later in the episode that B happened. And you realize, oh, well, I was thinking it was A because Vic told me it was A, and I thought he knew everything. And you find out, well, he doesn't know everything. So he's a very flawed character in many ways. Certainly, as a cop, there are things that he's able to get done that the other cops can't or won't. And that way, it makes him, in some respects, a superior cop. But we don't view him as a superhero at all. In fact, we, if anything, try to concentrate on his flaws and weaknesses and try to exploit those in scenes.
That seems like one of the major areas of his flaws and weaknesses is the whole home scene. And
mm-hmm.
I'm blown away that you cast your wife as Corinne. How has it been working with your wife in scenes where it's an intense emotional she's having knockdown dragouts fights with Mackey and Chicklets and how does that dynamic work as a show creator?
Well, I'm usually not on set for him, so it works fine for me. It's good for Kathy. She's I had been out here in Los Angeles for a long time before I got the chance to make this show. And I knew a number of people who I felt were good actors who hadn't seemed to got the breaks that I felt they deserved. And when I got my show, it allowed me a chance to use some actors that I thought were up to this material. My wife Kathy was one of them. I'd seen her in a number of plays, and she, you know, she had trained very hard and studied, and I thought I was ready for it. You know, Jay Carnes, who plays Dutch, has been a friend of mine since 1989, had acted in a couple of plays that I'd written, and I'd seen him in a number of things, and he had gotten a few guest star TV roles, but nothing really beyond that. I knew what an extraordinary actor he was. And Dave Snell, who plays Ronnie, has been a friend of mine for a while, and had done, you know, TV movies back in Kansas City, where he's from, and you know has things on his resume. Did an Ang Lee film, you know, one scene in an Ang Lee film, but really hadn't been given a chance. So this show has allowed me to use people who I've known and whose work I've admired, you know, when other people weren't using them. The good thing about using Kathy in the show is, you know, for instance, today she's filming, and we're doing a table read of the show, whereas normally during the course of the workday I don't get to see her. Today I'll get to see her at the table read. I'll get to, you know, spend a little time with my wife in the middle of my workday, which is really nice considering how hard I usually have to work. But essentially, she's just one of a few people who I've just given a chance to, who I thought their talent deserved the chance. You know, Hollywood is a very tough place to break into, and to be able to use her and Jay and Dave and you know, the guy Matt Corboy, who plays Carlson the Unicop, I've known him for a little while. You've seen him in plays. To use these people who haven't been overexposed on TV, who deserve a chance, but I can present fresh to the public, so that people see Jay Carnes and not really familiar with him. They see, you know, people see Jay as Dutch. They don't know him from some other series 5 years ago. Kathy, you know, playing Vic's wife, you know, she's a relatively fresh face to TV, and so people just accept her as Corinne. One of the things that was important to me about the show was to, where we could, use unfamiliar faces, because I believe the audiences buy into those people more as their characters than you know, if you stuck cast with people.
Yeah, I'm sure now it'd be, you know, impossible to imagine, you know, a fight to get somebody like Michael Chiklis to be the star of a show. I mean, you know, that would even be, you know, be a question, you know, for a network or anything like that. And now looking at, you know, at what a, you know, how he's embodied Vic Mackey, it's just amazing.
Right.
So, but it's kind of tough that the more people in your show haven't had the accolade, that, you know, a lot of the accolades have focused on Vic, and, you know, you have people like Walton Goggins and you know, Jay Carnes and such, who are doing, you know, these performances, Catherine Dent, who do these performances that are so ahead and shoulders above what else is going on TV,
right.
And you just wish there were enough nods out there to acknowledge them all.
Well, we've been, you know, it's hard to complain because we've been very fortunate when it comes to critical response and to awards, to have won the Golden Globe for Best Drama, and for Michael to have won these awards, and we just had the Satellite Awards last week, and we won Best Drama, and Michael won Best Actor, and Cece won Best Actress. So we are very lucky in that regard. Having said that, you know, Michael deserves every award he's won. But this is a case where I think being on FX has hurt us. The awards going beyond Michael, it's sort of like, well, you're on FX, we're acknowledging the show a little bit, we're acknowledging Michael, that's enough for you. whereas if we were, you know, like the West Wing on NBC or the Sopranos on HBO, I think the support for these other actors would run deeper, because certainly the work that Walton Goggins does, you know, Benito Martinez in this upcoming season, you'll see work that's just unbelievable. Jay Carnes, Catherine Dent, Michael Jace, you know, all these people, the work is deserving to be considered amongst their peers who are normally recognized at these awards. And I don't know if it'll ever happen or not. You know, it's just a case where I think, you know, in some ways we've been overly praised, and in other ways, as it relates to them, I think we've been underly praised.
Yeah. I would agree. I think, you know, the show is a cocktail of amazing performances, and it's hard to, at times it's hard to pick out one and saying, you know, that's the one. I mean, of course, Of course, Chicklets for Mackie is just, head and shoulders beyond, and he's incredible. But when you look at the rest of the cast, and it's like, each episode, everybody has their nugget, and it's hard to imagine, one without the other.
Right.
But
I agree.
so I know you work, your life is pretty consumed with the Shield. Do you ever have time to look at any other DVDs? Are there other DVDs or commentaries that you've watched or seen that have given you something that you've then, had in your brain going forward in working on the series?
I try. It's usually during the hiatus that I get to sit down and, and watch other DVDs. And I haven't had a hiatus since like last June. But like the last one, I recently got the DVD, one of my favorite movies, Say Anything. And they do a commentary track with Cameron Crowe, who wrote and directed it, and John Cusack and Ione Skye. And what's interesting is that they had so much to talk about that, like, the first 7 or 8 minutes, they're just talking over black before the movie starts. And then the movie starts, and they're talking over that. But they just, they couldn't contain all their commentary to just, the picture of the movie. So I watched that recently. For better or for worse, with two young children, the DVD that's mostly in our system right now is Dora the Explorer. So that gets played over and over again. And my oldest daughter actually loves Finding Nemo. So we've got that in the DVD. But it's really a case where in about a month, when I'm done with this season, I'll have a chance, at night when the kids are asleep to catch up. I've got about 150 DVDs that I need to watch, and not enough time right now to watch them.
So without giving spoilers away, are there any teasers or sneak peeks you can give into things to look forward to in season 3 for The Shield?
Yeah, I think, the end of season 2, it ended with Vic and the guys having successfully ripped off the Armenian mob, and you saw all this money that they had successfully ripped off. In the first season, I think the major through line of the show was David versus Vic, and David was really trying to bring Vic to justice. And in the second season, it was David realizing that wasn't working, and creating an uneasy alliance with Vic, and Claudette became the main antagonist for Vic. Claudette's conscience sort of dictated to her that she go after Vic. This third season, while there still are external conflicts, both from Claudette and David and other people, the main area that we focus on is internally within the strike team, what's stealing this money and the problems it causes, how that creates tension and conflict within his own team. So in many ways, the enemy was outside the team the first two seasons, and this season we focused on the price of success, the price of having money, the price of committing the original sin of ripping off this money, and all the ramifications that come from that. So I know that's a little vague, but there's a lot of internal pressures on Vic and Shane and Lemonhead in this upcoming season.
Are you kidding? March 9th can't start come soon enough. I've been I caught the series actually on DVD, and it was a mad dash to get through season 2 to make sure before the March 9th start to be ready for season 3. And
oh, thanks.
It's an exceptional series. It's one of those ones where I don't go around recommending a lot of things to people, but it's the kind of thing where I've been telling people no, run out, buy this DVD.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And season 3, I'm really not a person to sort of talk up our own work, but we are right near the end of the season, and I think season 3 stands with or above either of the first two seasons that we did. I think the episodes have turned out really amazingly. We've got actors who really get their characters inside and out now. We've got directors who've directed for us a number of times, and they've come in and done the job. I've got writers who are working on their third year on the show, and everybody's in a groove, and I think it's turned out really well. We also, because things were going so well, we agreed to do 2 extra episodes. So whereas the first two seasons consist of 13 episodes each, We're doing 15 episodes this year, so people can look forward to at least a couple more shows.
And are you up for the extensive commentaries again for DVD?
I am, you know, there. I had very little time, sort of between season one and season two, so we only did four commentary tracks on season two, whereas we did tracks for all 13 episodes in the first season. And I think this upcoming year, it'll probably be somewhere in between, but we're going to do a lot of them.
Great. Well, I'm sure that will make a lot of DVD fans extraordinarily happy. The first two seasons were very well received, both critically on our site and with our community, the people who read our site. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, and in fact, now I have to go back in the writers' room. We're breaking the story for the very last episode, and we've got our DVD producers in there with the crew filming it. We're going to follow the creation and the execution of the last episode of the season. It's going to be a big, long documentary. So I go from talking to you about the DVDs to going in there and being filmed for it. So.
Well, in about what, 9 months or so, I'll get to see 9, 10 months, finally get to see that.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for taking time.